Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Okay.
As we go.
It'll just be a grayscale party.
It will be.
Because ain't no party like a grayscale party. Because a grayscale party can't be stopped.
It cannot.
Hear my words and bear witness to my vow. Night gathers, and now my watch begins.
Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. You do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up. Please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie? Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all. Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello, and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I haven't read any of the books in George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire, but I have read 2 of the 4 existing expanded Star Wars universe books.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and I've read every book in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I've read all the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, and I watched the Star Wars trailer once.
Ooh. Just the one time?
No. Don't be silly. What kind of person only watches it once?
Seriously. You can either watch it like not at all or at least three times.
Right. You either have to be one of those people who's like, I don't watch trailers. I close my eyes before movies.
You can be Matt Patches, who's trying to avoid every Star Wars thing ever before the movie comes out.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun for him up until the fall, and then it's going to stop being fun. But for you listeners, we have actually gotten tweets about, do we spoil Star Wars? No, there will not be any Star Wars spoilers on this podcast. This is strictly about Game of Thrones. We're talking about episode 3 of the 5th season, High Sparrow. And I finally get to talk about religion, which I like almost as much as banking in the perspective things we get to talk about in this fictional universe.
Yeah, it's your thing about religion is weird.
Religion and banking.
I like the detail, like the little cracks of the world building. Like, you know, it's easy to come up with, you know, big battles and kings and stuff. Well, I mean, not very easy, but easier than like all the details of an economy and different religious structures, I think. So I find them
interesting. Like you would, I feel like you'd really like the books.
I might. We probably have to revisit at some point whether or not I'm ever going to start the books, but not quite yet. I'm still like really depressed by the idea that like I'm still going to have to wait years to read a conclusion. I go through things fast. Plus, I'm already two books behind on Star Wars, and you can't get behind on Star Wars. You never know what you're going to need to know when comes December. But once again, we're not talking about that. We start at the House of Black and White with Arya, and we learn that everybody at the House of Black and White serves the many-faced god, who is Death. And I was thinking that maybe I think this week's theme, since maybe we should start there, is like being able to hide your true beliefs and the way you contort to still make power plays from that. I'm not sure if I could simplify that and still touch all the storylines.
Yeah, walk me through how you think that thread goes through the episode.
Okay, because Arya is like making a vow, but doesn't throw away needle. and Tommen and Margaery start to position against Cersei, and Cersei to counter sort of starts involving the High Sparrow, or at least I'm assuming that's what she's doing, because that fits into my theme, not because of any like weird foreknowledge. Brienne and Pod is actually the inverse, where they're revealing things that had sort of been like hidden up until now, but it's still their true beliefs of who they are. And Jon has to be a Stark, but also reject being a Stark. And am I missing anybody? No, I think that's it. Well, at the very end, I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but I think that vaults us through a whole bunch of book that I don't know about, from what I understand. So maybe we'll get there? But that's a lot of the plot lines.
I mean, I think you're right in that we could talk about what concessions you make. Concessions you make of your identity towards surviving in this world or getting what you want while also trying to stay true to yourself.
Yes.
Is that?
I mean, I think that's just as many words, but I think we're saying the same thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not condensing. I'm just trying to rephrase to make sure I understand.
Oh, yeah. And we didn't even talk about Sansa and Littlefinger, because that's very obvious, I feel, there.
Right.
Perhaps the most obvious. And something we'll talk a lot about after someone talks to me about why our monotheism comes from the east part of the map.
Because up is down and houses are black and white.
Well, because isn't the aren't the red priests also from that side of the map? There doesn't seem to be a lot in Westeros.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. It's monotheistic in the east and polytheistic in the west. And that's the opposite of what we usually understand world religions, how we usually understand world religions to work.
Is that all it is?
Wily George R. R. Martin. I don't think there's a deeper meaning for that. I mean, he's basing a lot of the Westeros culture on medieval. I mean, I know a lot of medieval culture was monotheistic, but, you know, I think he created the monotheistic society before, in the books, the emphasis on that, well before he really started to explore the monotheistic one. So the location, I think, matters less than the fact that he started in Westeros. I could be wrong, though. Neil, do you have any thoughts on that?
No. Maybe. Well, so yeah, it's... I think you're probably right. I think he started with... the smaller kind of story of what's happening with all these families in Westeros, and, you know, with the two, basically the old gods and the new, and then he kind of built it out from there. Because when you meet, like, early on in the series, when we meet the Dothraki and Dany is there, there's not really any religion that comes up in that storyline. So the religion doesn't get built out until she starts spreading out into the free cities and meeting the slaves.
Right, and we get it without Melisandre and a little bit with Thoros, but in terms of, like, our main characters. I mean, I think the book is just slowly exploring the East more than it had in the past. So, in the
and
show.
I do think that, I think that the House of Black and White, like the inside of the House of Black and White that we see in this episode, is one of the most interesting looks at religion, because it has all the iconography of all of the different faiths. Like, basically the idea of when he talks about, we know, when he says to Arya, like, we know the one God, the one true God, he's basically talking about death. Like, death is the God, right?
Right.
So, but they, the way they, when they kind of pan around the House of Black and White, you have all of these, you have the heart, the flaming heart, you have the drowned man, you have the stranger from the seven, like basically the faceless men operate under the assumption that, like, there's only one God, it's death, he comes for us all, but it's, they see it representative in all of the other religion, which I think is, that's such an interesting kind of starting point for all the religion that kind of is to come, I guess. Especially in, like, the next two books worth of material that we have.
So it is the oldest, technically, since we don't know the age of this sect of assassins. But, like, if their one god can reflect into many gods, is it possible that this is the oldest religion?
I don't think so, because I think in the context of the show, I could be wrong, but I think in the context of the show, the oldest gods are like the weirwood tree sort of stuff that the northerners do, which is different than the seven. So, I mean, maybe that's, you know, Eurocentric, Western, I don't know, maybe the Essos viewpoint does predate it, but. You know, please, religious devotees of Game of Thrones, of the Song of Ice and Fire, please do write in and enlighten us to stormspoilers@gmail.com if we are wrong about any of this religion stuff. It's yeah. never been the most interesting part of the books for me, even though I respect the mythology that Martin has built. It's never been that interesting to me, but I know it's interesting to you, Dave, but it is an inevitable part of this world struggle, is these different world views. And it's really cool the way they explored it in this episode with, you know, the House of Black and White, the Sparrows, the whores in Baelish's brothel, and then the Red Priestess on the Bridge of Atlantis. You know, like, just hitting them all was really interesting.
Yeah, they had to bring it back really fast. And also, the concept of zombies just, like, pokes its head up for 3 seconds, which was interesting. But I guess we're going chronologically, so we're not there yet. yeah, House of Black and White. Arya realizes she's going to have to do some training, but is unable to give up the sword, even though I love the line that no one is surrounded by Arya Stark's thing. The man... thinks no one's surrounded by Arya Stark's things. I don't know. The line was cool. I wish I could quote it off the top of my head. That's how cool it was.
I also missed the line because I was so just overwhelmed by Arya saying, dropping a C word.
The C bomb.
So good. Yeah. So good. She's really evolved from that little child.
And then she does some sort of weird training thing with another girl that I didn't understand, washing a dead body, I think.
The waif, yeah.
Is the waif important? Is she going to be like the training buddy? Or like the one that's always trying to get ahead of... Is she already trained? I don't understand her positioning.
She's further in... Well, no, she's been there a long time. Long, long time. I don't know if that's how it's going to work on the show, though. What do you think, Neil?
Well, in the books, I was just kind of rereading stuff about the waif after someone tweeted about the actress, and I was like, ooh, interesting, because I didn't even realize that was who she was. I just thought, oh, this is another girl in the House of Black and White, but when you look at the actual casting, it says waif.
It says the waif, yeah.
Not what I was expecting, because apparently she's older. She's an older woman, but she is the one who handles the poisons in the House of Black and White for the assassins. So, like, handling these poisons has caused her to age very slowly and be, like, shriveled and small.
So, like, the orphan?
Maybe. Which yes, orphan? Kind of. But, like, in the books, I always got the impression that she was, like, kind of shriveled. Like, she was, like, this,
oh,
like,
the orphan from the horror movie. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Spoilers for the end of The Orphan, everybody. Sorry about that.
I was like, are we talking about Oliver Twist? I don't know who we're talking about. Okay, sorry. I'm on point. Okay.
But I always kind of like imagined her as like this very raisin-skinned.
Yeah, like the
woman who just looks deformed. Almost.
You know, like the Children of the Forest, which we met last. You know, they look young, but they also look old at the same time, and that's sort of what you think of the waif. But this, you know, Faye Marseille, the actress, who's great. She's in Pride. She was on Doctor Who last. Like, she's wonderful. I love her. She looks, I don't know, just a bit older than Arya. Not much older than Arya, right?
So. Yeah. It's hard to say whether they're going to go into the kind of the weirder stuff.
Like, well,
couldn't she also do that and then also, like, just change her face? Because it's the
It's
TV
true.
Show.
They've already kind of ditched a couple of things about the faceless men.
Yeah.
You know, like we talked about, like last week we talked about how he just changes his face, or 2 weeks ago, whenever we met Jacken again, where he just like wipes his hand over his face and he's a different dude. Whereas in the books, it's like this long process of like blood paste and masks. And so it's interesting. I'm curious to see what happens to the dead bodies. Because in the books, it's one thing, but I don't know if there's no way they're going to do it in the show.
What is it in the books then?
They basically like, well, I mean, they They
use the faces?
They discard them, but they take the faces and they like stretch them out, use them as masks and stuff like that. So that would be a dark twist. But then again, like, you know, we're in dark territory with Arya's story as it is. So I think that we could, everything's on the table, especially with, you know, like with the other stuff in King's Landing, which I'm sure we'll get to, like the Qyburn stuff.
Yeah. Like,
weird, gross stuff is on coming. The table for season 5.
On the slab. But like,
so, why not?
But at the same time, I wouldn't be upset if they let go of like some of the like more weird nitty gritty stuff of Faceless Men. Sure. I think it's cooler if you don't go into to explaining exactly how it happens, or if it's sort of like a Zen thing or whatever. Meaning that, you know, when Arya, you know, spoiler alert, starts to do this, like, I don't want to see her, you know, blood pasting someone else's face onto her face. I want her to do like cool wipey shit with her hand. That's what I would rather see in the TV show. So
yeah,
I think it's one blood pasting.
Okay,
just one.
I do think it's a really great nod to the books. I guess if they do discard it, the great nod is when she asks her, you know, what do we do with the bodies after we clean them? And she just kind of gives this look like, you don't want to know, like,
girl.
This,
nope, girl,
we're not
going
to talk about this yet.
Cut off your face. Cool. Anything else over at the House of Black and White that we missed? It seems like already that's a lot.
Well, something I wanted to talk about, address in terms of viewers, is that I think viewers are pretty bored with it already, because it is kind of like dreary, and this is a story we've seen a million times. It's, you know, it's obviously like a Mr. Miyagi, you know, Karate Kid situation. You know, so I think viewers are impatient to see Arya get to do cool shit. And, you know, I guess we'll talk about that next week. Okay. Well, next week we're going to talk about Neil's theory about what that is. But,
which one?
In Arya's.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. Sorry. I totally forgot for a second what my theory was.
It's great. We're going to talk about it next week. And I think it's going to pay off. Like, I think people will feel like it's worth the wait. But I can see people getting upset and bored waiting for it. And it's the same thing, like, with Theon. People got so bored waiting, like, watching Theon be tortured week in, week out. But it pays off now, I think, when you see him, like, you know, hovering around the frame in this episode, like staring off into the middle distance and just looking so zombie like that it makes sense. It works, you know. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
So you know, it's one of those things, and you have, as a book reader, you have to balance whether or not how much you want to say, like, it'll be worth it, because you don't want to spoil someone. But, you know, I think we feel like it's going to be worth it. So
good.
I hope so.
It's like, Where Are My Dragons kind of, like, broke me, but I was not in enough to the show to, like, be really hurt by it. I just sort of laughed at it. So now it's like, as long as it's not Where Are My Dragons, I'm kind of okay with it.
Where Are My Dragons was bad.
Yeah, and then what's the payoff? Locked in a safe. Great scene, guys.
Well, no, I mean, she went into I forget what it was called, the House of the Undying.
Was like, it's
the House of the Undying, dream sequences, Dracarys. You know, there's some decent payoff. Not like a whole season's worth of payoff, though. So, all right.
Yeah. Yes, there was the what? Yeah. But then we gotta get into like weird. I enjoyed having the scene with Drogo, but, like, I would have liked more of what it was supposed to be, like, long-term prophecy.
Oh, I agree. I think, you know, we didn't have this podcast back then, but I think we could have gone nuts on what the House of the Undying should have been versus what they did in the show. And how they just decided to not do cool, crazy, out there, doesn't mean anything to a show watcher, you know, prophecy shit on screen. Which I respect them. I respect that decision. But as a book reader...
Also... They were also working with a much smaller budget back then.
Right, that's true.
So much more can be done now.
Yes, face cuttings off and things.
I really hope that it pans out, because I think we just got Dave excited for something that may not happen.
Did his?
Well, that's nothing new.
No, not at all. But at least the religion is here in King's Landing. Hey, segue.
More religion.
More religion. But first, we gotta live through another wedding. Less people die at this one than at usual weddings we've been to in the past few seasons.
It's the green wedding.
Really? It had a
Oh, as in like, yeah, life.
This is what I've taken to calling it, the green wedding.
I like it. I love it.
Goes by really quickly, and one of them's not ripe yet.
Oh, ripe enough though to want to set records.
I mean, he's been, you know, yeah. I was a teenage boy once too.
It was like 5 seconds.
Common is living the dream, right?
It was like 5 seconds of being jealous of him, and then the rest of the scene being like, you know what? They could have put Sir Pounce in this scene. I don't understand why he had to be like. That's what that's what you're waiting for.
That's
Sir
exactly
Pounce of House Cockblock.
And I know that they hated working with Sir Pounce, but couldn't he have just like they could have cut to the corner of the room and Sir Pounce just like runs across the corner, doesn't actually have to interact with any humans. Like, allegedly, that's why he's been cut, because he was, like, cats are annoying to work with. But, like, put him out of a frame with any humans. I don't need humans interact with him. I need him pouncing on a mouse. That's it, you know?
Yeah. If this show ends without even a production, like, a publicity still of Tommen sitting on the throne holding Sir Pounce, like, stroking him like an evil genius.
Like Dr. Evil.
I'm going to be so disappointed.
Like Dr. Claw.
It'll not have been worth it.
Someone I imagine on the great internet can figure that out for you.
Make that
it's another t-shirt idea.
Pounce needs to come back. But I was distracted by sexiness / gaming of Tommen. And then we jump over.
Marjorie's got good game, right?
Yeah, we jump over to more Marjorie game, where she finally gets to put down Cersei, which she's probably been waiting
Holy
to do
mother.
Since she got there.
So good.
It's good from like the Dowager Queen to the it's a little early in the day for us for wine. It's all good.
I mean, they basically condense like this huge long kind of back and forth in the books into like this one scene, and it's brilliant. Like the way that scene is written is just perfect, because they can just plow through the rest of this storyline and. We get it.
We are all on the same page. Marjorie hates Cersei. Cersei hates Marjorie. And we get why. What was I going to say? Oh, there's this great... someone on the internet... Maybe I'll put a link to this in the show notes. And by I mean Dave. We'll put a link to this in the show notes. But there's these great visual recaps of Game of Thrones. As someone who's obviously read the book is... doing this season, and I tweeted about it, but we'll put a link to it. But one of my favorite lines was when Tommen was talking to Marjorie. Basically, it's just screen caps with like funny captions, and one of them was, "Mom, can I talk to you about like Casterly Rock home for the elderly or something like that?" I was like, yeah, it's perfect. Nothing better than describing memes out loud. Sorry, guys. All right.
No, it works. That's actually a lot of what we do here. Back at King's Landing. Okay, so Cersei, the dude gets humiliated. The High Septon gets humiliated at the brothel, and then Cersei decides to use this to position somehow with the High Sparrow. How is this related to what just happened with Marjorie, or is it? Or is it two different moves by Cersei?
I mean, I guess we can talk about it because this is just book knowledge, which is that like Cersei thinks that she is crafty enough that she can use this weapon, which is the religious zealots, the sparrows. She can use this weapon to claim more power in King's Landing, to wrest power away from Marjorie, to wage a war on the Tyrells. You know, without getting her hands dirty, without alienating her son. Because if she does it directly, right, she, Tommen, who loves having sex with Marjorie, is, you know, not going to be her ally anymore. But if she uses the High Sparrow, the Sparrow, to try to oust the Tyrells because they have enough skeletons in their closet that she can probably get that done... then she gets through with her hands clean. What Cersei forgets is that she's not her father, and she, like, is meddling with shit she cannot control, and then it all goes south and ends with, you know, the Walk of Shame. So, right? Is that accurate, Neil? Would you say?
That's spot on.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it... Well, yeah. I mean, Cersei's basically... She's really... She's just really confident.
It's like a middle of the road Republican. I'm gonna bring politics into this because no one asked me to. It's a middle of the road Republican, like using the tea. Oh no, let's talk about Gamergate. It's like someone being like, oh well, I don't agree with those crazy misogynist Gamergaters over there. You know, my position is much more reasonable, but you should probably listen to them because, or else, you know, I don't know. That's a messy analogy. I'll go back to the Tea Party thing.
I guess what the part of it I don't understand is we haven't seen a lot to indicate that the Tyrells have something that the Sparrows would want to use against them, right?
Well, yes.
In show context, we've seen Sir Loras being super gay, and everyone knows he's gay, so there's that. Mm-hmm. And that's not a book thing, but I believe that's where the show is going with things. And then, you know, who's to say that Cersei really needs the truth on our side, right? But I think in this episode, when we see her send off a message to Littlefinger and asks for an immediate reply or whatever, she's asking for dirt on the Tyrells. Mm. Like, what can I use on the Tyrells to take them down?
Does this mean Lady Olenna's going to come back?
Well, I know she's in this season, so.
Yes.
Wait, she's in this season?
Yeah.
This is news to me.
I know. It's
awesome.
They mentioned her. Like, it's stupid that Diana Rigg is in the season but was not at her granddaughter's wedding, right?
Right.
Like she wasn't at
that's
the wedding.
Where I thought that's maybe why I overlooked that, because I was like, oh well, she'll just be at like the funeral or the wedding.
She's in the preview, so I know that she's in the season. But like Margie had a toss off line where she was like, grandmother was so tired she had to go home immediately, like in this episode, to like explain that like allegedly she was there, but this is why we haven't seen her.
Right off camera.
But I also love that like Jamie left before his son's wedding to go rescue Marcel. You know, it's like I get it, he's going to rescue his daughter niece, so that's important, but he missed his you know, other son nephew's wedding to the same lady. He should have been there.
He was just so impressed by that box that fell apart just by like that party popper of a metal box.
So yeah,
interesting. All right, how much I don't think I need to know anything more about the Seven right now in terms of how it applies to this episode. It's just I need, much like the Sons of the Harpies, they're just slightly zealot like
oh, they're fundamentalists.
Sparrows?
I mean,
fundamentalists.
Yeah. Yeah, they're, I mean, think of them as like the, I don't know, the just the most fundamental Christian thing that you can think of that is just evading me at the moment, but like they are they're like Puritans, know, like it's like live humble, don't
but
have sex with other people of the same gender. Yeah, like so, and so they are like, their belief structure is, you know, poor, live to the letter of the law of the Seven. So I think that's where Cersei is like, well, Marjorie, you know, she and her brother clearly have enough going on that these guys aren't going to want to, you know, are going to want to not be happy with them. So that's why she's kind of aligning with them. And it's like, I made this weird joke in my recap about like, well, wait till he figures out that, you know, the Lannisters are, you know, like the Wu-Tang Clan of Westeros and cash rules everything around them. Like he's not going to be super happy with what's going on with Cersei when he figures out who she really is. So,
well, that's, yeah, exactly. It.
That's like, the whole point.
Yeah. You can't, what is it? You can't point out the splinter of someone's eye if you have a log in yours. Like Cersei trying to wield this force to unearth skeletons in the Tyrell family closet. Like, don't bring the Sparrows close enough that they could look inside the Lannister family closet, because, oh my God, it's all scary in there. It's
lots of
those kids.
In there.
Yeah.
But what was I going to say? Oh, I like the show change a lot of making Loras like the, I don't know, the alpha sparrow. I mean, obviously Jonathan Pryce is the alpha sparrow, but the beta sparrow, I guess.
Oh, you mean Lancel?
Oh, sorry, Lancel. Yeah,
that's what I did the first time. I'm glad somebody else did that.
Lancel, because, you know, then we have, it's not just these rando sparrows. Like, we have a person that we kind of know in the brothel talking to the Septon and stuff like that. So it's...
And it also helps that it's somebody who has some serious dirt on Cersei.
Hella dirt on Cersei. This is true.
I like that.
I'm just glad. I'm glad that we don't have Lancel and Loras and Asha and Osha.
Oh, that's too much.
Together, that would be like the worst situation.
My favorite show change was how they changed Robin, Aaron. Like, yeah. It was Robert Aaron, and they changed it to Robin Aaron because there was already a Robert, and it's just like. I don't know. I think we could have figured that one out. I have no idea. I mean, I know the names are confusing enough to people, so maybe y'all know.
It was like Robin with a Y.
Yeah, Oliver with a Y. Oliver with like his fake beard in that scene, in the brothel scene, where, it was great. That brothel scene was great. I mean, there was
he's also such a good employee. Like, he's such a loyal employee. He's like, sir, this is Littlefinger's brothel. You can't do this in here.
He is employee of the year. He should have a plaque. All right.
Anyway, so, see, I think, no. Cersei puts the Septon in the dungeons. That's what we're up to, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Because then we finally get to twitching the mountain in the background.
My heart hurts every time I see that.
Because
it means that Oberyn's still dead, and that guy's still alive, apparently.
Yeah.
I hate that guy. Took away my favorite dude.
He did. He's the worst.
Well, isn't he just keeping the Sandor name alive at this point?
The Clegane.
The Clegane name. Sandor was the first name.
Sorry, it's Sir Robert the Strong, right?
Yeah, Sir Robert Strong.
Sir Robert Strong, right? That's his Frankish name.
I think that is one of the cool things from the book that, and obviously we're going to talk a lot about this later, but one of the things I can't wait to see, like how they pull that off visually, because the way they describe it in the book is like he is this solid silver knight. Like the armor just sounded so cool. And, I'm hoping that they pull it off in a really neat way when they finally do reveal Sir Robert Strong.
Yeah.
Strong.
Mirror suit.
Yeah, basically.
And I Anton Lesser, who's playing Qyburn, I love him so much. It wasn't just first of all, they waited the perfect amount of time where you just see him like sitting there placidly writing a message to Littlefinger, and then like the sheets move behind him.
Yeah. Well, he has that thing in the small council earlier where the High Septon doesn't know his name and he's like, it doesn't matter.
That's what I was going to say. That was my favorite line when he's like, doesn't matter.
Which is good. The guy who's playing him isn't doing the crazy eyes anymore that was important to him before, but now needs to be more of a like player at the council.
Well, he's like, I'm resurrecting people in the basement. Doesn't matter if you know my name. Right. Really, does it?
Nope. Now I'm in charge. all right. Winterfell. On to Winterfell, unless we got more that I missed at King's Landing. I think we covered the good
pieces. I think that's pretty much it.
All right.
Hold on. I do have one more thing.
Because
we constantly talk about our love for Mace Tyrell. Mm-hmm. And just when the High Septon's talking to them, and Mace Tyrell is the one who's just like, well, I never, basically. Oh my, that is just not the place you should be. He's will I never guy. it's like the biggest shock in the world to him that anyone visits a brothel, which I think is hilarious considering who his kids are.
Yeah, he is the best human.
So, on to Winterfell.
Good facial hair, too, while we're talking about it. Yes, on to Winterfell. We got Theon and the Boltons, and Ramsay is up to his Ramsayness. Is the person that he flayed, is that important book-wise? The person he talks about flaying?
Or whatever? No, I don't think so. No.
No. It is important to show like how the Boltons are sort of terrorizing the North at this point. Like that's the only way they can keep control. And this really plays into why the wedding of Sansa and Ramsay is so important, is that nobody likes the Boltons. They right. suck. And they're having to like literally peel people's skin off to get them to pay taxes. So they really, really need a win with the Sansa thing.
Right. And Bruce is, you know, enough of a player to recognize that this, he cannot hold it. You know, this, the flaying will not work indefinitely.
Right. He's very pragmatic and strategic. Yeah.
And it was a good callback to the Burn Boys in that same courtyard that you know, Theon was responsible for. Those Burn Boys that were hanging from, I think, the same, like, archway. So
yeah, it's we're seeing as much Theon as we did. It makes me think that this is the beginning of this season's Theon arc, which can only be more humiliating for him.
It's about time. I mean, we're a little worried about this. We can talk about this, like, because it's mm-hmm. sort of different than the books. We don't know what's happening, so this isn't foreknowledge. But I think we've been worried, given what the actors are hinting, that someone is in for a terrible time at Winterfell. And I think our biggest concern is that it's Sansa, because nobody wants to see Sansa back in the victim role. But as Neil floated, you know, earlier today before we started recording, and as I think some of the plot descriptions maybe bear up, it might be Alfie Allen, it might be Theon that is in for even more torture. Which yeah. is just like,
well, I mean,
I
just
don't know.
Trying to connect the television story dots, if Sansa recognizes him and that connection, Ramsay realizes it exists, Ramsay kind of can't punish Sansa, so could punish Reek, right?
It's possible, exactly.
Yeah, I think it's even simpler than that. Like, it's the whole idea of Sansa really doesn't know what she's getting into with Ramsay. But there is one person who could tell her
right.
what's up. And it's not going to be Ramsay's girlfriend. So
she hates Sansa and wants to kill her.
She's not a fan, apparently.
She's not into Sansa.
In one look, we figured her yeah. out. But yeah, so I mean, the idea that I had was, I mean, what if Ramsay catches Reek kind of laying it down for Sansa? Like, here's what you're into. I don't that could end poorly.
That
yeah,
could end
poorly. I honestly couldn't tell whether or not. I mean, I think what the show is going for is that Lord Baelish, like, how do you explain Peter Baelish walking Sansa into this nightmare of an arrangement? Well, one thing, you know, and so they did a lot. They had a lot of explaining to do in this episode. Like, first of all, oh, Sansa's still a virgin, so her marriage to you know, Tyrion doesn't count. And okay, why would the Boltons risk pissing off the Lannisters by allying with Starks? Well, Tywin's dead, so Roose is ready to move on. Why would Baelish risk pissing off the Lannisters? Oh, Tywin's dead, so I'm ready to move on. You know, this is all the explaining that they had to do, but one question remains is why would Baelish walk Sansa into this marriage if he knew what a monster Ramsay was? And so what this episode, I think, is trying to tell us is that for all the shit that Baelish knows and for all the he is good like measure of people, he does not have Ramsay's number. And that's going to be a big miscalculation on his part, right?
He just thinks he's, you know.
He doesn't know he's a monster.
Right.
So we know.
He's just some bastard kid, you know.
Yeah,
right.
With the weird eccentricities of which he's seen all of, he thinks.
Right, and so you know, it's going to come to pass, you know, like if Sansa does come into some kind of peril, maybe not the kind, you know, I think Baelish is going to kick himself. Cause I really do honestly think in his own twisted way, he cares a lot about her and wouldn't mm-hmm. actually put her into danger. So,
well, if we also assume that at some point Brienne and Pod get there, wouldn't this be a fun thing to reverse from the tavern where suddenly Littlefinger's like, maybe we're all after the same thing here. I also love Catelyn.
What a great impression. You sound like you're the mayor of Baltimore.
I can't do anything more with that.
Anyway, fun.
That was a Wire reference, by the way, guys, not a current event reference.
how dare you, Joanna, bring politics into discussing Game of Thrones?
Good timing. I was not trying to do that.
We got through a whole discussion about religion and made virtually no real world parallels. I was very excited.
I talked about the Tea Party, so I don't know what podcast you're listening to.
Well, I have the two actual religions. It's politics. Hey now. Anyway. Yeah, that's setting up Winterfell. Yeah, I think that really completely sets up Winterfell. Is there anything else up north?
I thought the Brienne and Pod thing was interesting. Because I think that they're adding a wrinkle to Brienne's character with the story she tells. Well, I didn't say with the story she tells, it's all just kind of background and like why she loved Renly. But what she says at the end about Stannis, I think is really interesting, because you know, even though we're Stoneheart truthers, we still have to live in the reality that they have to give Brienne something to do potentially in the show, because they haven't killed her yet, which is great. I look forward to many more episodes with Gwendolyn Christie, because she's amazing. But so they have to kind of give her a new purpose, because the Stark girls didn't want anything to do with her. She's still following Sansa, but they're also heading north toward where Stannis is. And Stannis, we know with this episode, is going to be moving toward them. So the idea that Brienne really does want to avenge Renly in killing Stannis, I think is fascinating in a way that, like, there's potentially stuff there that is in books that aren't even written yet. Like, there's potential that, like, what if Brienne does kill Stannis? Like, that's crazy, but totally possible.
Absolutely, I agree.
So I think that, you know, I could be reading way too much into it, but it could be one of those show things where the show is sort of, like, slowly easing us toward this new end point that we didn't know was coming, which I think would be very cool.
I like that. That also sounds like something that might take all season to get set up, and then we get to spend a year thinking about that thing you just said.
Right.
Fun. All right.
But I thought it was an interesting little moment, because I was like, ooh, that's new.
Well, it is like, it's kind of like, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. That is interesting seed that they planted. It's also interesting to me, this is a minutia thing, but it is weird to me that, like, Moat Cailin got a... I mean, they both went and looked at Moat Cailin, and then Moat Cailin was in the opening credits. And Dorne still isn't in the opening credits.
I know.
Maybe, we didn't go to Dorne this episode. Maybe when the Sand Snakes show up, but, like, I'm like, I get it. Like, they already have the Moat Cailin thing built so that they could just, like, swoop to it and it's not a thing, but I need that little tiny Dorne in the opening credits, or I'm gonna be pissed.
Me too. Maybe it's like a geography thing. I've been trying to reason with this since first seeing the episode, so for a while now. I've been trying to reason with why Moat Cailin was there, and I was like, well, maybe it's a geography thing, you know, they want to show the progress of them going toward Winterfell. And I was like, no, because they end up in Winterfell.
Right.
In this episode, it's not like a long thing where it's like this huge thing across the north. I don't get it.
Wait, it's first, right?
Yeah,
it's King's Landing.
Oh, it's first in the credits. Yeah, they go to Moat Cailin, and then they go to the King's Landing in the opening credits. Yeah, and then show. Yeah. But yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Time.
That Moat Cailin,
I'm gonna say
is
time.
In the credits.
I'm gonna step in as television production person and say timing. Because we don't go to Dorne.
I know.
Yeah.
It's fine. I've spent.
If they don't do Dorne at some point, I'm gonna be mad.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I need to see it eventually. If I saw Moat Cailin, I need to see Dorne eventually. That's all. Okay.
Well, it's sort of like the Simpsons couch thing, right? You cut the episode together, and you have this much of a hole to fill, and you slot in all the cool, the little windy cities that the special effects place made you.
Yeah, that's true, because there's really not any, like, Pentos isn't in there. They didn't do one for Volantis. There's no, like, because there's always these other castles that they show that aren't in there. This episode really is contained into, like, what, four locations? Four and a half locations? I guess you'd call practice.
Yeah.
So it's probably they just didn't have anything else to show.
It used to be like for the Simpsons reruns back in the late 90s, the like primetime ones would use the abbreviated opening that just sort of started with Homer in front of the house. And then the late night ones had like less commercials, so they would do the full opening that was attached to the episode. And so you could always sort of like look on your VCR tape that you would set and know which time slot. Dating myself now. All right, let's go to the wall. One of my favorite scenes, which is Davos talks to John and once again makes the argument that I made or said that I would take last week. Which is that I would become a Stark and go take over the North. But John's much too honorable, which is what we learn up North, as far as I know. What has, if anything, has been left out here? It seems pretty straightforward.
I actually want to talk about what's
TV
been,
show.
I want to talk about what's been added, which is another reference to freaking Ollie, the show-created character. And, you know, John leans really heavily on, like, you know, he's my steward as I was Lord Commander Steward, and maybe one day he'll be running this place too, which just feeds into our theory that Ollie might be the one to stab John at the end of the season. Why I don't know why else they keep, like, leaning so hard on him being a character. So, you know, if he feels like he's learning stuff from, if John is going hard on, as he is right now, on the honor and, you know, this is what it takes to be Lord Commander, this is what the Night's Watch is for, and then he reverses at the end, I could see Ollie, like, kind of. I mean, they're going to have to work really hard for it to make sense that Ollie stabs stabs him.
Make us like him again. Like, being forgiven by Jon Snow does not make me like kid that showed up to shoot at Ygritte.
Yeah.
Like, to get put a face on the person who shot Ygritte.
Just because Jon likes him doesn't mean we like him yet, so that's true. But I don't know that maybe we don't need to like him. But anyway, we certainly do like Jon in this episode, because, my goodness, that Janice Lent moment was fantastic.
Yes.
great redemptive moment for that character.
Well, and there's just so many rich moments in that whole sequence. Like the Alistair Thorne moment where, like, he's like, take Lord Janice into custody, and they go up and Alistair Thorne's like blocking the way, and then he just gives this little eyebrow raise because that actor is the best. And he's just like, well, I guess we're not friends anymore. See you, buddy.
I know which side my bread is buttered on. Bye.
I'm going to get your head chopped off.
I know how to not get killed, at the very least.
So it makes him wise. Man, yeah. I hope that at some point, maybe Ollie's being kept around so his death can be sad. Like, we don't like him enough to be the stab, to get the maximum amount of something out of stabbing, right?
We don't like Jon Snow enough?
We don't like Ollie enough. Like, Ollie? You want it to be like a no... Or is it enough that... Is it like Batman, he creates his own villain by trying to...
Maybe. It's so hard because the character that ultimately gets him in the books is not even in the show. I mean, he's sort of there, but he's like a background dude.
Exactly.
But like,
someone pointed out that, like, he's in the show. I'm like, yeah, but nobody watching the show knows who Beau and Marsh is. Like, so that's not going to be the person who does it.
Right. And the other candidate is Alistair Thorne, which I think... I don't know. I don't buy him either at this point. Like, I think that... John has done I think that they respect each other.
Right.
Like Alistair Thorne and John. So I don't know if he's a survivalist. Like, I don't know, maybe. Maybe they're setting it up to where, like, it's payback for stealing the Lord Commander's ship from him and relegating him to, like, lead Ranger. But I don't know. It's going to feel weird no matter what. Which I think
he'll figure it out.
The better theory is that John gets killed by something not one of the Night's Watch guys.
Yeah. This is another one of Neil's great theories. So.
Neil's great theories. This is the one that we referenced, but we haven't talked about yet. Nor will we hear.
No, nor will we hear. It's coming, guys, though. I promise it's coming.
Everyone's going to shit one.
Since this is the book reader podcast, though, we should talk about the big book reader line that was missing from the show that people got as upset over as they did when only Kat was missing from last season.
I think at least Pat got upset.
I sort of go on the crazy people board sometimes, so I see a lot of like the extreme reactions. If you think we sound crazy for being Lady Stoneheart truthers, you should read some of these message boards. But it's Ed Fetch Me the Block. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure I got the line right. So
Ed does it in the show. Doesn't Ed do it?
I'm pretty sure Ed is the one who just doesn't say it. But a lot of people, I guess, reading the book felt like this is a really defining moment, like his iconic line. You know, I think instead he said, "What, Ollie, get my sword," or something.
My sword.
Yeah, Ollie, get my sword is a bastard version of Ed fetch the block, but it basically means the same thing. You know, which
and
is
then he
that
finishes
I'm gonna
his
man
drink.
Up. Right now, I'm gonna nut up right now and be Ned Stark reincarnated. So it was good.
Yeah, it's the opening Ned Stark and Jon Snow scene of the show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the beheading.
Yeah, lots of people beheaded on this show. Favorite way to watch somebody die.
It's definitely better than getting your head squished in.
Yes.
I'll say that much.
This is a little insider baseball.
In terms
baseball.
Of watching, though. Oh, good.
This is a little insider baseball, but the site that I write for wanted to do a piece on how, like, the technical aspects behind all the beheadings on mm-hmm. Game of Thrones. And HBO did not want to do it. They rejected us really quickly. So I don't know what that's about. But, like, aren't you interested? I mean, is it too gruesome to be interested in the technical aspects of, like, how they did Ned Stark versus how, you know, because Ned is obviously CG. Like, if you look at all the beheadings, they used to, like, cut away the middle distance when they did it. And with Janice, it was, like, right up in there, you know? So, like, their beheading game has escalated over the season. So I'd be interested to talk to the practical effects people to find out how they did it. But they were not interested in talking to us, so there you
Interesting.
Go.
Yeah, I don't know why you would avoid that. It seems like if
we
you
don't
want to
focus on how our show has so much dip.
You had upped your game. Well, maybe it's because you can't be trusted to talk to special effects people who will be cutting off people's faces later on in the season, and they can't be trusted to talk to you.
Maybe.
They're a little looser-lipped.
Yeah, that's the hope. Is it because it totally would be a special effects person that's like, you think the head beheading was good?
Wait
till you see the blood paste.
People's faces.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
That's true. I feel like I've been to enough sets to know that, like, if you really need, like, a story, like, those are the dudes you need to be talking to, because they're the ones who don't care. They'll tell you.
Yeah. They actually want to talk about what they're doing in a very excited way. It's fun. It's like prop people and, to a certain degree, CGI reference people, I've learned. Anyway, back to Game of Thrones. We got some beheadings. We're at the wall. Are we all the way to Tyrion? Is there anything else at the wall we forgot?
No, I think we can talk about Tyrion.
All right.
Yeah.
So apparently this is abbreviating a whole bunch of stuff in the books, from what I understand. But is it still staying correct to what we've lost? Does anything join the Boneyard that I should care about?
Yeah, big time.
Oh, go. Someone tell me.
I think Neil should talk about it.
Wait, what?
We're talking about Aegon, young Griff and Griff.
Oh, well, can we put him in the Boneyard yet?
We can put them on the road to the Boneyard. They can still turn around and come back from the Boneyard if they want to.
Oh.
Sure. Because this is, you know, Volantis is where they meet, correct?
No, they meet him at Illyrio's and go with him to Volantis.
Oh,
so
that's
when,
right.
Like,
okay.
So when he, like, sets off with Varys, people could still think, like, oh, they'll meet up in Volantis. But now that he's, like, in Jorah's custody, we know he's on his way to Dany, and he's not going to meet them. Like, I mean, they're definitely not going to meet them this season because they haven't been cast, you know, and they don't hang out with Jorah. So, like, they're definitely not coming this season. Young Griff and old Griff, or Griff and young Griff, who's, like, young Griff is a secret Targaryen nephew of Dany and it's a huge part of the book, so it would be crazy for them to cut it, but they might.
Is it weird that something that I saw, because descriptions of future episodes are not off limits, right?
Right.
Okay, because I saw something that threw me off in the descriptions of the next couple episodes. There's one in here that says something. Where was it?
Is
of course, it's not going to be. No, it's about the slavers.
Jorah and Tyrion run into slavers.
So
unbowed, unbent, unbroken.
Yeah, so episode 6. So I read that and I was like, oh shit, like that could be it. Like we may not have got, like, first of all, if they're going to put young Griff and young Griff in the show, they could have been playing possum the whole time. You know, like it's very possible that those two characters will be as much of a surprise to everyone as they would be to somebody who didn't know.
Stoneheart truther.
So, but it's weird because, you know, this podcast has got my head deep in the details. So when I see a line like that, I mean, in the books, they do eventually run into slavers. Like that's a skip. Like that would allow them to kind of skip over all the Griffin Young Griff stuff. Like it's slavers that ultimately take Tyrion to Meereen.
Right.
But I don't know if we can put Aegon and Lord Connington into the Boneyard yet. Like I think that it should have happened by now if it was going to happen. You know, just I think it's going to be one of those cold hands things where we're like, oh no, you know, they're still north of the wall. Cold hands could show up, you know, right, halfway up there, and it just right, never happens. But I don't know. When I saw that, I was like, maybe.
I don't think so. Because, like, I know spoilery or, like, whatever, who's been cast as the slavers. Like, I think what they're doing with the slavers is something different.
Okay.
And is not going to involve them. But...
Oh, okay. I think I know.
You guys can say that stuff out loud.
Full stop.
Okay.
I think I know what you're talking about. Like, how do they get to the pit,
I guess?
Like, how do
well,
they...
Well, I mean, like, Tyrion... You know? I don't know. I'm actually not sure, like, that I want to talk about this right now.
So Griffs.
Yeah, because I feel like we're getting close to the fire on this one. Like, could actually be stuff.
What did we lose from the Griffs that you think should have happened by now?
Well, I don't think so. I don't mind losing them. Like, if it turns out that young Griff / Aegon Targaryen is a pretender in the book, which, you know, is a strong theory, then mm-hmm. and doesn't matter in the end, then and the show is like, well, fuck it, we're not going to lead them down that rabbit hole and not give them any payoff, then no, we're not going to do it. Then I thank the show for doing that. You know, same mm-hmm. is true of Penny. Delighted Penny's not, you know, like, there are these... And I talked about this in the article I wrote about this for Vanity Fair, because one of our listeners actually pointed out to me this interview that Martin gave Charlie Anders at IO9. I don't know if he's talked about this before. I know that people knew he was originally supposed to do a 5-year time jump, but like in the books. But so what happened is like he couldn't make the time jump work. So instead he's just padding the books, allowing the children to grow up because he wanted to end the books with them older. So he's padding it with all this extraneous stuff like Kingsmoot. And, you know, a fake other Targaryen, all this stuff that's just extra stuff to distract us that he, you know, and we're not fooled because book readers know that, like, a lot of their favorite characters have been sidelined a bit to stall for time, I think.
You know,
so that's
it is
my
sad,
theory.
Though.
Like, and if they don't show up in the show, I think that's a confirmation that they don't ultimately matter. And Martin just invented them. I mean, you know, in his lovely, deep, intricate way, he's very good at spinning yarns. It's interesting in its own right. But at the end of the day, it's not going to matter to the plot, you know?
True. Mm-hmm. I do think that the saddest part, you know, as we start our Viking funeral ritual for Griff and young Griff, is that it, from a book standpoint, it does mean that we're probably one season and done with Dorne. Like, because the Dorne storyline that is happening now, like with Marcella and... now Jamie, I guess, and the Sand Snakes and all that. After it ends, the only thing that happens in Dorne that's really interesting in the books is young Aegon lands. And the Dornish are like, well, we got to go find this kid if he's a Targaryen.
Right.
So if the show's cutting that out, I think...
Well, a Targaryen and a Martell.
Right, yeah, because he's Elia's. Right. So I think ultimately that would make me more sad than losing those two characters is like, oh, great, well, we get one more season of all these cool people in Dorne, and then that's it.
And, I mean, maybe that's why they cut Arianne. You know, Arianne Martell is not in the season. And maybe if the Dorne plot is not going to matter eventually, which would make sense since it's another Feast for Crows plot that's been put in there to pad things out, then, yeah, one and done. I mean, that would be a bummer. And it's, you know, they send envoys to Dany. I mean, like, it's the continuous sending of people over to Dany that gets interesting, right? So, like, Dorne people over to Dany, you know, Greyjoy people over to Dany, like, that sort of stuff. That's interesting. So if they cut that, we lose that connection. But maybe we make up for it by having Tyrion be much more involved in her plot, which, you know, by the look of it, him posing with dragons on the poster, like, is going to happen. So
wait, Dorne sends people to Dany?
Yeah.
Because of Aegon Targaryen landing there.
No, it happens before that.
Yeah,
it's
it does.
So Doran, Prince Doran, has three children in the books. He has Trystane, which is the one that's in the show, which is the one that's betrothed to Marcella. He has Arianne, who's the oldest. It's his daughter. She's the heir of Dorne. And then there's Quentin, who goes to... he decides that he's going to... I guess he gets sent, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
He gets sent, and he's trying to woo Dany, essentially. And he believes that, you know, because the Dornish people came... There's something about him that he believes he's got blood of the dragon in him.
Right.
I forget what the connection is. But he, you know, believes that he can ride a dragon, and that works out poorly. In short.
Because the TV production guy in me once again says that, like, if you can find a way to keep, like, the Dorne sand snakes around, if they're going, if they're committing to being off books, they might as well find a way to get them over to Dany. But I don't know.
I can see
One of them ends up in King's Landing, I guess, to take the small council seat.
Right. I don't know what they're going to do with the Martells. I really don't.
Yeah. It's a mystery, and it's a sad mystery, because I think it's not going to be enough for my heart.
Yeah, because where's Bran? Things like that have to be dealt with in later seasons.
Right, well, you exactly. know what's great is the way that they brought Jorah back. Because, like, the first shot you get of Jorah is his, like, what you call him, like, a gauntlet, right? His arm braces, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, slams a drink down on the table, and you just see his arm brace. And if you're keyed up and looking for it, you get excited. You're like, ah, Jorah's back!
Sir Friendzone!
And then that shot of him looking so sad at prostitute Dany, bottomless prostitute Dany, you know, and then snatching Tyrion. I'm delighted. I'm delighted by those two actors getting to be together in some form or another. I mean, this is us saying goodbye to Conleth Hill for a long time, possibly. So that's a bummer. But yeah, I'm excited for the Jorah Tyrion pair of.
I really love, this is one of my favorite book changes. I think so far, if I had to rank them this season, Jaime going to Dorne with Bronn is like one.
Yeah.
Brienne and Pod still being alive is good. And then this one, like, it's almost like they, at the end of last season, they're like, all right, well, you know, if we're not going to do this Griffin Young Griff storyline, who should hang out with Tyrion? Like, who are the best people to hang out with Tyrion? It's like, all right, well, we'll just give him a bunch of companions along the way.
Varys.
Just like all the good ones. Yeah.
Like, let's give them all the best ones.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be good.
For a brief period of time, everyone we loved was off boats. But unfortunately, I don't think that's going to stay the same in between episodes.
Back to the boat.
Back to the boat for some of us. All right. That seems like a pretty thorough discussion of High Sparrow. I'm glad I got the religion in there right at the top, because that would have felt really extraneous now. Is there anything else from the episode that we want to talk about?
I don't think so.
The North Remembers.
North Remembers.
Oh, yeah, that was a great book thing. The North Remembers. I got, like, chills when
that's
she said it.
I mean,
right?
It's super cool. For me, this episode just basically comes down to, like, Dark Arya is coming, the North remembers, Sir Friendzone is back, and, you know, Jon Snow.
It's gonna fuck some shit up if,
yeah.
You know, God's willing.
Yeah. One god, I think. Mirrored into
the god
many.
Of the god of death is really seems to be the most consistent and present one so far. I mean, I think Arya is onto something by just worshiping death.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's a safe way to enjoy HBO's Game of Thrones. You get hurt a lot less that way.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
In the heart pieces. Guys, where could we find more of your work on the internet? Let's do Joe this week first.
You can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, on vanityfair.com. And you can listen to Dave and me talk about the Avengers Age of Ultron on the Thought Bubble podcast next week. And
Oh, that's happening next week, is it? Very well.
Ain't it? The end.
I listened to that one.
Neil?
You can find me on Twitter at Rejects. You can also find us at Storm of Spoilers, which I think is important. I've been posting fun stuff. And you can read
that Twitter.
I found my calling. And then you can read my long form, which is multiple sentences, on filmschoolrejects.com.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. I'm on Twitter at DA7E. I write at latino-review.com, forbes.com, and geek.com, and podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com, where you could find back episodes of this podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com/gotspoilers. Also, stop by iTunes and leave us a review if you have something to say. I'm going to start reading them. I've been just assuming they're there and they're good because
I read them.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Please leave us reviews.
I love reviews.
Can I really quickly say that we had a lot of feedback actually on our requested Brian and Pod spinoff titles, and I forgot to collect some. But off the top of my head, I want to say that my favorites were Growing Pains.
Yes.
The Pod Couple was another good one. and we just got one on Twitter from someone at Amazing Base or Basque who said, "I vote No Pain, No Game." For the spinoff title.
Didn't somebody say House of Pain as well?
That House of Pain is also good, yeah.
House of Pain. Wow. We got Boneyard. I don't think we have anything to ask for this week, but I like brainstorming spinoffs and theory names. This is all good. You guys are wonderful. We'll talk to you next week.
Monsters are dangerous, and just now, kings are dying like flies.
I am the king!
Fuck the king.
Knowledge.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.